Now, this is Box to Box with Michael Edgley and Willem van Denderen.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. With Rob Gilbert on the bench, you're with Willem van Denderen and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news shortly, and of course, throughout the show, we'll be joined by our former ITN journo turned pundit, Derek Dyson. The Oly Roos have bombed out of Olympic qualification, failing to score across three games at the Under-23 Asian Cup in Qatar. What does it mean for this generation of players under Tony Vidmar? Network 10 and Paramount Plus caller Robbie Thompson will join us to chew the fat on the disappointment and preview the run into the A-League men's finals. In the UK, Ipswich Town remain second in the championship in a wildly fluctuating season that now has just three games to play. Nancy Frostick has joined us in the past to cover the Lionesses and the Women's World Cup. She's picked up the Tractor Boys beat for The Athletic this season, and we'll welcome her back for a chat on this potential promotion. World Cup corner and plenty more to close out. FA Cup, Champions League, A-League Women's Finals, and that disappointment in Doha Edge. But I want to ask you another APL horror show that had me throwing my phone at the wall midweek when I saw that the Dolan Warren Awards night has been scrapped, or at least wound right down, with the player, young player and goal of the seasons to be handed out at halftime of the Grand Finals.
Yes, that's extremely disappointing. And I think I'll just echo the words of Simon Hill that they know the price of something, but they don't know the value. And that's whatever money they have saved on cancelling the Dolan Warren Awards evening and its associated broadcast, whatever they have saved, they are losing much greater than the value of just the money. They've lost, again, more credibility with the football community because these things matter and they're important. And the great names of Julie Dolan and Johnny Warren need to be... need to be recognised and continue to be reinforced as something that is an unbelievable thing in our game, which is the best player in the A-League for men and women.
And Derek, welcome to you, my friend. The Premier League slightly out of kilter this week with City now a game behind, having played in the FA Cup, but an insane week nonetheless of Champions League and FA Cup action to unpack as we go.
Yeah, well, obviously the FA Cup brought some great narratives, particularly the Coventry-Man United game. I won't knock over your pins there, Willem. And yeah, Premier League, intriguing as always, particularly at the bottom. And yes, of course, I've been away for a week and Arsenal have had a pretty turbulent time, but nice to see the Gunners return to the top of the table, albeit with having played a game more.
We'll pick up with the A-League Women's Finals. Melbourne City are in the box seat to host the Grand Final, having beaten the Jets 3-0 in their semi-final first leg before almost 7,000 people in Maitland. City set the tone early through Daniela Galic, extended their lead through Amina Ekic, and drove home the win thanks to another special goal to young Shelby McMahon, who's fast making a name for herself.
Beautiful ball forward for Shelby McMahon. Strike on goal, McMahon! And that may just seal... certainly this game, but maybe the tie. Shelby McMahon had all the time in the world, turned around and just lofted it over Tiana Robertson.
In the other semi-final, Mackenzie Hawksby's second half goal was the difference between Sydney FC and the Mariners. Plenty of goal mouth action in this one as well. Edge and the return fixture will be played at Leichhardt Oval. We'd build it a little bit as the established order against the underdogs, these two semis, and the Mariners at least are in with a bit of a chance to turn that result around next week.
It was a very tight game, the Central Coast Mariners in Sydney, and the Mariners on another day might have had one or two goals. But the big talking point out of that game is Princess Abini and her dislocated shoulder not returning to the field after half time. She did it actually at about the 15-minute mark and was able to pop it back in and struggle on for the rest of the first half. But she's been an incredible mainstay for Sydney FC right throughout the last four or five seasons. And I think she's incredibly important to the structure of that team as a player that is always in the right position at the right time. So everyone's going to be watching whether she's going to get up for the home leg that Sydney FC will play against Central Coast. And the 7,000 or just about 7,000 fans that were at Maitland to see the Newcastle Jets, the bubble popped, didn't it? Melbourne City did a job on them. And the big talking point out of that match was that Dario Vidicic, who we had on the program last week, Well, Hannah Wilkinson is superstar number nine. She started on the bench, and young Daniela Galic got the job in the central role and didn't let him down. So that was a very interesting contest up in Maitland, and fantastic crowd. But the Jets, the bubble has popped. Can they get anything going in the return leg? We'll have to wait and see.
And the bubble popped about 3 minutes in, Edge. It was a soft goal to cough up with 7,000 people in the stadium for a home final, having just won your first one the week prior.
Yeah, to put the spotlight on the decision to go with Robertson in goal as opposed to Izzy Nino, the American import. I just wonder whether Nino will be back in the sticks next week.
The Champions League semi-final first legs will kick off on April 30 with Bayern Munich to host Real Madrid before the following evening PSG travel to Borussia Dortmund. Drama aplenty in the quarterfinals as Dortmund defeated Atletico 5-4 on aggregate, and PSG overturned a deficit away from home to beat Barcelona 4-6. Arsenal were edged out by Bayern Munich 3-2 across the two legs, and the dream is also over for Manchester City, going down on penalties to 14-time winners and kings of the comp, Real Madrid.
Bellingham, the Englishman, in England, against the English champions. Up comes Kovacic. And it's saved by Lunin. And in theory, it's advantage Real Madrid. Rudiger to send Real Madrid through to the semis. He's done it! Real Madrid have shown their mettle once more.
Where would you like to pick up here, Derek? I think one thing that can be agreed upon is that if there was any campaigning for the reinstatement of the away goals rule, that's officially died. 5-4, 4-6, 3-2, goals aplenty.
Intriguing matches, Willem. Obviously, myself and Edge and Adam on the buttons in particular will be disappointed by Arsenal not taking the opportunity to beat what has been a lacklustre Bayern Munich team this season. But it just goes to show that cup competitions are the great leveler, and I think they were highly motivated to keep something positive on the board for their fans. Arsenal will go away and will be starting to think about next season already. Clearly, Real Madrid is the favourite for the tournament now. The winner of the Real Madrid City game was always going to be the favourite. City probably had the better of this game, probably should have won it, but you can never rule out Real Madrid. They do have a fantastic team, like, you know, Jude Bellingham, Vinicius Jr., etc., doing the job for them. I think really across in the other semi-final, the narrative is fascinating because obviously PSG, they've been there before, they've been to the finals. This is the tournament they really want to win. It will be Mbappe's last run at this tournament for PSG, and what a fascinating thing it would be if he had a chance to get his hands on the trophy before moving probably to Real Madrid. But Borussia Dortmund will have a big say in this, and they are in not particularly great form overall in Bundesliga. Have not been challenging at the top, but you know, it just goes to show that you know, a well-organized team can do the business. And I liked Mats Hummels' little tongue-in-cheek tweet that he put out saying great results for the farmers, because I think A German league has been described as a farmers' league compared to the Premier League, but of course it's the Germans who are in the semis, and the English teams all went crashing out. So, look, I'll be tuning in, looking forward to those semis, and wow, maybe it's a Real Madrid PSG final, wouldn't that be something?
Certainly would. And Manchester City put the agony of that penalty shootout loss behind them as they defeated Chelsea 1-0. Bernardo Silva, who'd missed a spot kick with the decisive goal. So that puts City through to an FA Cup final for the second consecutive year. They're chasing their seventh. And once again, they'll face Manchester United, who were three goals up, Derek, against Coventry, only to watch that lead get whittled away and extra time forced. There was a fourth goal in the net for Coventry City that was ruled out for offside. Once again, they've rolled into Wembley, and despite the result, they've won a lot of friends and some rhetoric prior that they're desperate to be hated. They need to be justified in the modern world as a club. But I think the way they're going about it, they're winning a few too many friends for that, unfortunately.
Oh look, it was a fabulous game of football. You thought the game was dead and buried with United 3-0 up. The comeback was extraordinary. The joy, then the desolation of that fourth goal. And look, if we're being really honest, it probably was a toenail offside. And that's why VAR is there. I mean, I don't know if this was a clear and obvious error. And obviously, you know, even a couple of seasons ago, that would have been a magical finish to the game because the goal would have stood. But because of VAR, we're looking at centimetres, we're looking at inches, we're looking at, you know, atoms on the end of your toe to see whether something's offside. And obviously Manchester United scraped through on the penalty. So that sets up the repeat of the City versus Man United part two. Of course, City won it last season as part of their treble, and they'll be looking to make it a double after that Champions League demise. But a lot of people calling for Ten Hag's head here. They've been calling for it all season, but they saw this as another example of just how atrocious Manchester United are, throwing away a commanding position against a side many places below them in the division. So narratives all over the place in the FA Cup.
And the narrative from the own box-to-box leader, Rob Gilbert, he wanted us to give a big shout-out to Chris Adams, his mate who is a commentary fan who flew all the way from Australia to see that comeback. And I imagine Chris would have been doing cartwheels when the fourth one went in before VAR overturned it. Some great little images on our own box-to-box WhatsApp chat of Chris and the commentary faithful in the grandstands. It was heartwarming stuff, wasn't it, Willem?
No, most certainly was. And as I say, that's two trips to Wembley now within 12 months, and neither time they've gotten the result, but they've put themselves back on the map. They were, you know, a championship. Were they in League One for a spell there as well, Derek? Like, they haven't been prominent for some time since they went out of the Premier League in about.
No, I think they've been down. I think they've been down as far as League One. Of course, they, you know, there was a lot of optimism because they moved into that brand new, as it was called, Rico Arena at the time. They're leaving Highfield Road, their old ground, but all sorts of problems with losing ownership of the stadium, not being tenants of the stadium. I think they had to go and play games at Northampton at one point. So it was an absolute shambles. Let's get it right. Coventry was a basket case of a football club, but they are on the edge of promotion. This FA Cup run will have put them in the spotlight. And yeah, it's hard to not feel very, very sorry for them the way they went out, but they can be very proud.
Socceroos and Matilda Central for the Green and Gold Army. Do not delay a moment further in booking your trip to France to see the Matildas win that long elusive Olympic medal. Matches against Germany, the US and Zambia in Marseille and Nice. Sounds pretty good to me. Head to ggatravel.com.au. Big Cassini Yengi Edge, he sealed promotion to the championship with Portsmouth. He scored his ninth goal in their 3-2 win over Barnsley that ends a seven-year stretch in League One. Alex Robertson, also heavily involved throughout the season. And to borrow one of my favourite Rob Gilbertisms, who could forget when they went from the penthouse to the shithouse with the few pen strokes when they went into administration from the Premier League. But they're slowly climbing their way back up there. Long history of Aussies at Portsmouth. Everyone knows Craig Foster and Hayden Fox, but did you know, Edge, Socceroo number 111 Eric Hulme signed with the club in 1951. It was only sort of late in my research that I came across that, so there will be more to come in coming weeks. But that is a nice long history for an Aussie at Pompey.
It is, isn't it? Yes, now the Aussies at Pompey, there's been quite a few. And it's one of those clubs that's always courted the White Knight, and it's all turned terrible at different times.
Alessandro Saccati made his 26th appearance for Parma Calcio in their 2-0 win over Spezia, then backed it up in a draw against Palermo. So they sit 3 points clear of Serie B with 4 to play. St. Pauli back on the winners list. Jackson Irvine and Connor Metcalf 5 clear of third with 4 to play. And did you catch the Champions League midweek edge? Harry Kewell and Yokohama right in the mix against Ulsan Hyundai. They lost 1-0 away on Wednesday, but they go again this week at home. That would be massive to have an Aussie manager back in the Asian Champions League final, despite the fact that he has come in late in the picture, not a full Tony Popovich build or an Aurelio Vidmar for that matter, but still a huge achievement nonetheless.
Massive achievement, and I think they're a big chance at home to turn around that deficit, and wouldn't it be sensational? And just another opportunity for Rob Gilbert to gloat about his prediction of Harry Kewell one day coaching the Socceroos.
Some more Matildas work to close out. Ali Carpenter's assist kickstarted Lyon's comeback in the Women's Champions League semi-finals. They were 2-0 down at home against PSG, the big rivals, but they won 3-2 to take a lead into that second leg. Hayley Raso off the bench for Real Madrid, setting up their third in a 4-2 win over Levante. Tegan Mica back in for Liverpool to keep a clean sheet against Bristol City. And both Alana Kennedy and Mary Fowler played full games for first-placed Manchester City in a 5-0 win over West Ham. And I think Edge wants to chat about the English Women's Super League, which is nearing its conclusion a little bit later on in the show in World Cup Corner. So hang out for that. Robbie Thompson, Channel 10, Paramount Plus, one of our key callers, one of our strongest voices on the game, appreciative of not just on the field matters, but the broader picture. And once again, we're scratching our head this week with the Billy Roos missing Olympic qualification by some margin and the Dolan Warren Awards decision, which we chatted about off the top. So all of that on the agenda with Robbie next.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Shortly after the Socceroos pushed Argentina all the way in their last 16 clash at the 2022 World Cup, Graham Arnold told All and Sundry of the role the August 21 trip to Japan for the Tokyo Olympics had played in the development of many in his squad. The current Oli Roos will not have that opportunity, having drawn blanks in all three games at the Under-23 Asian Cup over the weekend, just gone. And to ponder just that, why that is the case, welcome back Robbie Thompson of Network 10 and Paramount Plus. Robbie, g'day.
G'day, everyone. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
What's your diagnosis here? Despite the noise around Nestori Irankunda and the numerous players that have been barred by their clubs from being available, those that were there still seemed very exciting and very capable, and that had a good long preparatory stretch in Doha tournament, and now we're here, three games, no goals.
Yeah, it's another one that's left. I think, you know, a lot of critics are coming out of the woodwork, and the keyboard warriors are as ever present as always, which is, you know, something that Australian football is never far from. But it is a bit of a head scratcher considering the quality of the squad. A lot has been said about the players that weren't there, but I think, even withstanding that, I mean, you're always going to have players missing for whatever reason. You've got to have depth, enough depth when you're talking about a national team to not only be talking about 20 players. You've got to have more than that. So that is disappointing. Failing to score in three games, going home at the end of the group stage when there was so much hope coming into it. And you talk about the preparation period. There was also a fantastic run of, you know, great results under Tony Vidmar as well, and the team looking like it was really capable of something. I think the Irankunda talk was a bit of a red herring. I'm not sure he was really in the picture for many reasons. But yeah, look, it's just bitterly disappointing to see that we're being overtaken, and this is the real point. We're being overtaken by many other countries in Asia, and you know, Indonesia is something of a sleeping giant, but they've shown that they're waking up, and perhaps we're not yet.
Robbie, how much of a disaster is it? Some people are saying it was the B squad because of all those players that were unavailable because of the being played outside of FIFA window. And on the other side of the fence, we've only qualified for one men's Olympics position in the last four cycles. So it's not as if we qualify regularly for it. This age group
exactly
has struggled at Asian Cups previously. So how much of a disaster is it?
Look, everything on the spur of the moment is a disaster. And this is not just particular to Australian football. This is all over the world when a certain generation looks like it's struggling. But, and you know my history in France, but I can look to France and say that their under 21 side has underperformed for decades. And yet they are one of the greatest senior teams in world football, in men's football anyway. So the under-21s for years and years and years in France has always struggled at the next level. It's not a disaster, like you say. We're not regulars at this level. Olympic football is a different beast as well. Well, Olympic football is one thing. Qualifying for the Olympics is one thing. I think it's better just to focus on the fact that we're out of the group stage of the Asian Cup, which is disappointing, irrespective of what it qualifies for. We should be looking, you know, to compete in the top 8, 12 countries in the Confederation. If you're in Europe, you're talking about, you know, a Portugal, Netherlands, Belgium, you know, kind of level. We should be trying to compete at that kind of level in Asia, in our Confederation. So it is disappointing. There were lots of quality players there. It doesn't matter. Like I said before, it doesn't matter if it's a B team. It's your team. They're wearing the colours. We have coaches that are also there to show the way we play, to get the team to play good football, irrespective of who's there. So I don't like to talk about who's absent and who's not there and excuses like that. It's disappointing. It's not a disaster. You know, we move on. It's underage football. It's junior football. The important thing is the pathways at club level are there. We've got to see young players playing, which most of these guys are in the A-League, or the ones that were absent playing overseas, trying to get minutes overseas. In terms of player development, club football is where it's at, not in representational football. It's a handful of matches compared to playing a full season, and that's where we need to show, yes, it's representative. Yes, we get to judge the quality of our youth development at an international tournament. But, you know, this is the team that did so well at the Toulon tournament, you know, last year in France, that did brilliantly in Marbella. I mean, it didn't happen in this tournament for ABC reasons, which will be looked at. But club development is the key. And we've seen that some of these players coming through are excellent at club level. And that's where the money is.
What do you think the level of sort of the atmosphere in the football community, the response to this result in years gone by when there was not such a fragmented media? I think we would have had 4 or 5 hours on SBS, the World Game, dedicated to every little bit of detail about this tournament. But in this current media landscape, what is it, white hot in the football community, or is it a more nuanced level of retrospective perspective?
I think the football community was as always keeping a very close eye on it. I mean, we know how passionate the football community is. I think, Edge, when you look back and you talk about, you know, youth football and international tournaments, I remember the 1991 Youth World Cup, which, I mean, and you talk about that, the
unbelievable, wasn't it?
The hours on SBS, and the fact that we made the semi-finals and lost to Portugal, Rui Costa scoring an incredible goal. I mean, I remember that tournament like it was yesterday. And that's the impact that a youth tournament can have. That was, you know, we weren't qualifying for World Cups.
To get us to
the Olympics, exactly. Or John Markovsky at the Olympics in Barcelona. I mean, all these moments were incredible. So, yes, there is a great value in youth football representing a country. And now, look, but football has changed so much. I mean, we could talk for hours about the fragmented football media coverage. I mean, this happens, and the biggest noise in the football community in terms of national media is about a red card in the A-League, or and what a disgrace it is, and how, you know, the whole thing's falling apart, coming apart at the seams. And that those are the loudest voices, and you all know probably who I'm talking about now, is so disappointing for it to be so agenda-based and so agenda-driven, the criticism, instead of constructive criticism. We saw Simon on the ABC show, and I love the fact, I listen to you guys regularly, I love the fact, and stop me if I'm talking too much. Last week, I watched Offsiders on the morning, and I started messaging people saying, I can't believe this. And then I listened to you guys in the week, and you said exactly the same thing. And it's just, it gets your blood boiling.
Oh, it does.
And then this week, I see the same thing from other people in football. And I just think, I saw Simon on Offsiders. You know, Simon is such an important voice in Australia for football, because his criticism is constructive, and it's always coming from a good place, and it's always trying to move forward. And he's a far better journalist than I am, for example, at ordering his thoughts and being argumentative and putting it out there and convincing people and representing people. And so it's so good that we have someone like that who can carry those messages and stand up and defend the sport at that level. But look, the media is a joke. The media is a joke. The fact that a public broadcaster is not covering the biggest national, longest existing national league for men and women in the country, and not even giving it the time of day as we come into finals football, you know, that's where people should be outraged. Yeah, yes, on the football pitch, what's happening. But without that, we've got nothing. And it's, you know, this is, anyway, that's the thing that is most galling for me at the moment. And I'm working in the industry. And I know, you know, we've spoken about this on this show before. Paramount Plus is not faultless in all of this, but there's a lot of noise and talk going, and, you know, people that don't understand all the facts, that don't understand who produces what, who provides what in the broadcast, all these deals and everything, and where the money goes and all this sort of thing. There's a lot of noise and hubris around it. But the fact is, football is the loser in the Australian media scene at the moment. And it's infuriating, and it's not new.
No, it's not new. It's been going a long time. That's a good segue into my last question before I hand back to Willem. I just got a sense at the moment that we've got two trajectories for our game in Australia. The women's game off the back of the Women's World Cup, sellout Matildas matches. We saw an unbelievable crowd at Newcastle and Melbourne City, the semi-final, almost 7,000 people. The growth of the women's game at the junior level is unprecedented. The under 20 young Matildas directly qualified for the World Cup. Matildas qualified for the Olympics. There's that trajectory, which is an incredible story. And then there's the APL administration, which seems to have having difficulties granting itself and communicating a lot of its decisions, which Simon obviously spoke on Offsiders about. But mm-hmm. that trajectory at the moment is challenging all of us. Do you think it'll settle down under the leadership of Stephen Conroy? He hasn't been chairman for a long time. But do you think that organisation is going to settle down and start to be more grounded? Because on the surface, the Dolan-Warren decision had a lot of people scratching their heads saying that might save you maybe $150,000, but the cost to the reputation of the APL, it's been far greater.
Yeah, again, I think... You know, I think a lot of this comes down to the communication or the way you dress it up. I mean, it's the APL is in a very difficult situation at the moment. Clearly, financially, it's in a difficult place. It's had to reel in. We know the people that were let go from the organization, the cost cutting measures in place, and all of this is very confronting. When you look at the Matildas, and to a certain extent the Socceroos as well, because the Socceroos are also flying the flag for football in Australia. But the women's game is the salvation at the moment for football in Australia. And it's a beautiful thing, you know. I think it's I think, you know, in a country, in a sporting landscape where we've focused for so long on the male side of the game, have struggled for so long in a country of, you know, macho sports and all this sort of thing, that the women have picked up the baton and female football is leading the sport forwards. You know, I think it's, when you say, how do I see it going? I think it's ruffling a lot of feathers. I think there are a lot of people in the game that are thinking, oh, geez, you know, this is confronting for a lot of people. But if the Matildas keep going on what they're doing, if the A-League women's competition can get in the slipstream and follow that and continue to grow, then it's the men that will be looking for tumble down benefits off that. The men's A-League, the men's national teams, it's the sport that will benefit. And I see and I get comments and people send me things about, you know, agendas and all this sort of thing. Look, if the Matildas are grabbing the headlines, if they're getting the cut through, everyone's got to jump on board. It's the sport that is benefiting from the fantastic work of these role models, of these leaders, and the results they're getting, because they are elite in the world of football. And that's what Australians love as well. So, look, I think APL, to just finish quickly on the other side of the position, it looks as though APL are doing it in a difficult situation, but, you know, fingers crossed Newcastle gets across the line, the ownership deal, very, very soon. Canberra, look, maybe it pushes back another year. The women will be there ACT government has come in, perhaps should come in even more. When you see some of the money that they pay for certain things in sport in Canberra. So look, for me, that's the minimum that the ACT government should be doing for Canberra United. They're doing it. Auckland come in. The league will exist. Whether it's under APL, you know, I have no information about that whatsoever. I cannot see APL relinquishing after just 3 years. It will continue. They've pulled it back. They'll continue to grow. It's baby steps at the moment after COVID, after the separation from FA. And, you know, hopefully it will continue to grow. But look, let's not cut off our nose to spite our faces. Everyone should be on that Tilly's bandwagon. Everyone, with the Asian Cup coming up as well. Live it. Enjoy it. It's spectacular.
Not to put ourselves in the story, Robbie, but even as we sort of prioritise how to sort of cover the game each week, the Matildas and the A-League Women's Finals have demanded sort of coverage at the top of the show, and we haven't found as much time as we would like, or we usually would have for the A-League Men's over the years that we've done this show. And I was going to ask you about the Wellington versus Mariners back and forth at the top of the A-League Men's table, which has been just brilliant for two of our historically smaller couple of sides. But we will leave it for now. Thank you for coming on and shooting from the hip. It looks like A-League Off Air is now a way of life for you, not holding back in any ways, whether you're on air or not. So thank you very much for coming on. Did you want to give yourself a little plug before you shoot off?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm very happy to plug you guys as well, because I think it's great the number of voices we have out there. Yes, A-League Off Air is there. It's a podcast with myself and Daniel McBreen and special guests, hopefully a special guest on tomorrow morning, and negotiating late into the night to get that one across the line. And it's a lot of fun, and we do shoot from the lip, I guess you'd say.
working nice and blue as we like it. Robbie Thompson, Network 10, Paramount Plus, A-League Off Air, League Podcast, all the good places. Fantastic to have you on once again.
Fantastic, a pleasure. Speak to you soon.
Stick around on the other side. We're heading abroad. Ipswich Town, second in the championship. Nancy Frostick of The Athletic will be back with Derek and myself for a word. Stock up and save right now at Chemist Warehouse. There's Panadol Extra Optizorb. That sounds fun. 40 caplets for just $10.69. Codral Cold and Flu Day and Night. 48 tablets for $17.99. And Zyrtec Hay Fever and Allergy. 70 tablets for just $37.49. Now, Edge, my aging body has been ailing, but I have a new best friend, Magnesium, the muscle relaxant. Brilliant stuff. You can get that at Chemist Warehouse for a very reasonable rate.
Magnesium's really good stuff. Yeah, I should take more of it, actually. It's a bit of a calming thing as well. Apparently, it helps your mood as well with it.
Okay, well, yeah, we could both use a bit of that from time to time. And in addition to visiting your local Chemist Warehouse store, and there are plenty around, click and collect is also possible to save time. Order online for delivery by Australia Post and get free shipping on orders over $50, or choose fast delivery for same-day home delivery. T's and C's and charges may apply. Chemist Warehouse, great savings every day.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Great savings every day.
And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices.
Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
The top of the championship table has buckled and flexed all season long, but with three matches to play, Ipswich Town find themselves clinging to the automatic promotion slots, 2 points clear of third. Remarkably, they're on the verge of back-to-back promotions after climbing out of League One less than 12 months ago. Nancy Frostick is one of the Athletic's elite. We last spoke when she was in Australia for the Women's World Cup, and she's since picked up covering the Ipswich story. Nancy, welcome back to Box to Box.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
The fairy tale is not yet over the line. Leeds are 2 points behind Kieran McKenna's side with three to play, as I say. But to be this close to back-to-back promotions is an awesome achievement in itself. So what do you put that down to? What have been the foundations laid in place of this success?
Yeah, it's been an amazing story. I went to see Ipswich and the manager, and went down to the stadium at Portman Road midway through last season, so when they were still League One, and everyone I spoke to there were like, yeah, but we're a Premier League ready club. And you hear that a lot when you go and see teams that have those ambitions, but I guess not all of them genuinely have that capability. But Ipswich are one of them. You know, big historic club. They've got a really nice training ground. They've invested in a lot of renovations to that and to the stadium. But since they had their new owners take over I think it's about 2 years ago now. They've just got a lot of decisions right. They've got a sporting director. They've got CEO, Mark Ashton in at CEO. He'd worked at Bristol City previously. And then they obviously struck gold with appointing Kieran McKenna, who's just such an exciting young coach. Great tactically and by all accounts, really good with his players. So
There are two Aussies in the side as well who we need to ask about, both dreaming of playing top flight football for the first time in their long careers. Mas Luongo in something of an Indian summer after spending so long injured, and to be honest, it wasn't expected that he'd put together this level of consistency again. And Cam Burgess, who, again, you know, I say consistency, he was a long way back in the Aussie stocks, but he's become a national team regular during this and off the back of this rise with Ipswich, really. So how are these two seen in the stands at Portman Road?
Well, I think, especially for Mas Luongo, like, he was signed really as cover for a couple of injuries. He'd been at Middlesbrough for 6 months, I think, on a short-term deal, again, because of those injury problems. And over here, I think he's always been regarded as a really quality central midfielder, but he did well at QPR and then moved to Sheffield Wednesday, and just a few injuries disrupted that there. But since he's been at Ipswich, you know, he came in as cover for Lee Evans in centre mid, who was injured, and now he's made that position his own. I interviewed him a couple of months ago, and he was sort of saying how the manager's just helped him sort of adapt his game, and he fits really nicely alongside Sammy Morsy, who he's a bit of the enforcer, and Luongo's kind of more box to box. Yeah, great player. Obviously, he just got back in the national team when I spoke to him, and now I know he's announced his international retirement. But yeah, Cam Burgess as well, like, such a quality player. And there's no reason why, if they go up, why either of them should lose kind of their position or their importance to the team, really.
Is it all the more remarkable with Ipswich that they're managing to put themselves in this conversation with the likes of Leeds and Leicester, who, or anyone who comes down from the Premier League who benefits from this parachute money? You know, Ipswich have managed to raise themselves from a relatively lowly position in League One. What does that say about the achievement, and, you know, how big a challenge is it to try and get past these teams that have got the extra Premier League dollars?
It's incredible because, you know, budget-wise, Ipswich are relatively well-backed for a League One club. But when you come up into the Championship, like, the gap is huge still. And the fact that about, you know, every month or two, everyone's gone, well, Ipswich will drop away, won't they? Oh, Ipswich will drop away, won't they? And they just haven't. It's really down to some smart recruitment, but also McKenna really just building a team that's stronger than its individual parts. So, you know, you might put someone like Leif Davis in the conversation for a team of the season or even player of the season. But beyond that, whilst they're all brilliant players and they're producing, they kind of work so well together that there's not really a standout in the way that some of the Premier League teams, it's like, oh, well, he's clearly, recently Premier League teams. You know, you look at a player like Crescencio Somerville or Kyle Walker-Peters or Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, and all three of them, you'd say, oh, okay, that, you know, they're clearly Premier League quality. They've just made the step down this season and they'll expect to be back there next season. At Ipswich, they've got loads of quality players, but it's the way that they work as a team, and they really will, you know, transition from back to front, play exciting football, and kind of tear teams apart that way rather than with flashes of individual brilliance. And that's actually a real strength because they're not reliant on anyone. You know, if they did lose Leif Davis this summer, I think they'd be able to replace him and everything would still work pretty well. So I think that's kind of the smartest way to build a promotion challenging team, really.
Yeah, which model, if they go up, which model do you think they could follow? I mean, there's a few to choose from. You can go for the Nottingham Forest shopping trolley dash, which has kind of come back to haunt them in terms of the points deductions. You have, you know, people like Luton who've come up and have virtually done nothing to their squad. It'll be touch and go whether they stay up or go down, but at least they won't be saddled with an enormous wage bill. You've got the likes of Burnley who come up with a philosophy, and to a degree company has been stuck to that philosophy with mixed results. Brentford seemed like a good model because, you know, they came up with a philosophy too, but it was less about pretty patterns of play. It was more about the impact of their players. Is there one in particular you think that they could look to emulate?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think a lot of their identity does hinge on McKenna and whether he stays. So if they go up, I think he stays, and that's great news for them. But if they don't go up, I think there's a chance he'd go to a Premier League club. I think I'd put them somewhere between Luton and Brentford in that. I don't think they're suddenly going to spend loads and loads of money. Like, yes, they were well backed for a League One team, and they've probably got, like, I would guess, sort of a top 10, maybe top half Championship budget. But, like, I don't think, you know, obviously if they get the money that you get from promotion, that they're suddenly going to sign 25 players this summer. There's definitely areas where they can look to recruit. But yeah, so I think they know exactly the type of player that they're after. I don't think they're quite as wedded to it in like the data sense that everyone talks about Brentford or even Brighton. So yeah, somewhere between, I would say, Luton and Brentford in terms of they've very much got a style. I think they'd sign maybe 4 or 5, but they wouldn't go mad.
And just getting the crystal ball out, there is only 2 or 3 games left in the season, I believe. Ipswich have 3 left, and you know the fixtures are interesting because there's Hull City and Coventry are the next 2 games. Now, you know, you have to get your calculator out. It'd probably be unlikely that Hull and Coventry can squeeze into the top 6, but I think mathematically it's not impossible. And Huddersfield at home seems like a pretty easy way to finish the season. Do you feel like Ipswich have got a good run in here compared to the other teams?
Yeah, I do. I think basically they've always found a way to win. So even if they go a goal down, some of their scorelines this season have been ridiculous. 4-3s, 3-2s. They will keep going right until the death. And when you look at it, Leicester have got to play Southampton. Leeds have got to play Southampton on the final day. I actually think Southampton lost at the weekend, so I think they're out of the running now for automatic promotion there. They're playoff bound, I think. So out of all of them, I think Ipswich have kind of got the most favourable run in. So yeah, if I was to put any money on it, I think Leicester will have just enough, but they have had a major wobble. And yeah, I quite fancy Ipswich to do it now, which would be nice because you never want to see the same teams kind of going up and down all the time.
Well, if they don't quite make it in terms of automatic qualification, there's a pretty good chance they'll come up against Norwich in the playoffs. I think Norwich look like they've just about done enough to stay there. They'd have to be, you know, they'd have to lose a few games to do that. I mean, whatever happens, you know, it could be, you know, Ipswich, Southampton, West Brom, Norwich. I mean, that is all going to be tough. But you know, they're going to have to turn around their form against their Anglian rivals because they've not had a great run of it recently, have they?
No, they lost. They lost both derby games against Norwich this season. So yeah, they'll want to sort that out because I don't think they've beaten them for quite a long time. They've not played each other that much in recent seasons because they've been a few divisions apart. But yeah, that would be quite a tasty. I mean, it'd be an amazing playoff final if it worked out that way, depending on the kind of final finishing order. But yeah, it wouldn't get much better than that. I think they'd much rather it didn't come to that. But they do say that kind of going up through the playoffs and winning at Wembley is actually the best way to get promoted, as long as you win, because you get that day out and the amazing occasion. So let's see.
Nancy, great to chat. I should have mentioned it off the top. You've put in one of the great box-to-box shifts here because you've jumped on the computer with us, and in a particularly un-English act, you might have to renounce your citizenship, but you've got the Matildas kit on.
I have, yeah. It's a lovely kit, and yeah, I think I've adopted Tilly's as my... if you can have a second international team, obviously Lioness is all the way, but yeah, it was a must-buy whilst I was over there, so get it out today.
Nice. Well, Derek is also a dual Australian, well, not also, but is a dual Australian English citizenship. So I thought that was a rare enough breed, but there we go. We're multiplying. So fantastic. As I say, great to chat. All the best to Ipswich for the rest of the season, and we'll catch you down the track maybe when the Lionesses are about to kick into another major tournament.
Lovely stuff. Speak soon, guys.
Nancy Frostick of The Athletic there. Stick around on the other side of the break. World Cup corner to come.
Willa, willa, willa. Everybody's going to buy Hoyt's Spices. Everyone's going to save a dollar or two. Everybody's going to buy Hoyt's Spices, yeah.
Wella, we know that you love Flavour Pack meals. We've done that by now, don't we all? Of course we do. But Derek, I was unaware that you were also a big fan of a couple of Hoyt's brothers who pulled on the famous Gunners kit from time to time.
Yeah, that's right. There was Justin Hoyt, right back, who played for Arsenal back in the early 2000s or so. Had a big spell at Middlesbrough, 140-odd games. Ended up at the MLS, played 299 games professionally. So that is not to be to be sniffed at. His brother Gavin was also at Arsenal, still playing actually at Maidstone United. He's done the rounds of the lower leagues, and he's now a Trinidad and Tobago international as well. And they come from good pedigree. Both mum and dad, Les and Wendy Hoyt, were both sprinters. Wendy Hoyt won a gold at the 1982 Commonwealth Games. So what a sporting family those Hoyts are.
Well, that's fantastic. A lot of people love Arsene Wenger. He checked out the amazing range of Hoyts. And if you want to be like him, check out the Hoyts Herbs and Spices and change the mood of your food from our very good friends at Hoyts. The flavours of your next meal will just explode in your mouth. And remember to refill your empty spice jars with Hoyts value packs. You'll be happy with Hoyts, just like Arsene, at Coles, Woolworths and all good independent supermarkets.
Fill those empties with
Hoyts
spices, yeah.
Box to box. Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyts Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back, World Cup Corner. Not a lot of time, but still a stack on the agenda to get through. The big news domestically this week from an Asian Cup perspective is that Football Australia has put forward New South Wales, Queensland and WA as its proposed states to host the 2026 Women's Asian Cup, which we're expecting to be ratified as in Australia hosting next month. Sydney Morning Herald has reported that Football Australia settled on that trio of states after an expression of interest process with state governments prior to the success of the 2023 Women's World Cup. So Edge Victoria, which didn't host any games beyond the last 16 at that World Cup, and South Australia, who was the sole host of the 2006 Women's Asian Cup, look set to miss out entirely. Now, that Victorian news did seem a bit of a surprise as it came to light, but perhaps not so given that the state government's still reeling from its $589 million bungle job of the 2026 Commonwealth Games, which they scrapped or bowed out of.
Well, the I'm a Victorian, you're a Victorian.
I'm a proud Victorian,
yeah. Yeah, the self-proclaimed sporting capital of the world, no longer. They ain't got money with them. It's simple as that. My mail is they didn't even respond to the expression of interest. You would have thought the biggest ticket in town, the Matildas, the second biggest ticket in town was the Matildas ticket to the Women's World Cup at Amy Park. The second biggest ticket in town would have been a ticket to the Asian Cup, but Victorians, you're going to have to travel interstate. I think just reflects, you know, Victoria's debt is more than New South Wales and Queensland combined. They are in a horror hole, the Victorian government, on multiple fronts around budgeting and so forth. The Commonwealth Games decision is indicative of that. I'm just disappointed for the amazing women's football stakeholders in Victoria who would have clamoured to see any Women's Asian Cup game at Amy Park. But unfortunately, the Victorian government, they're just not able to raise the cash and they're not at the table for that reason. And they've only got themselves to blame. And when the Asian Cup comes here and the Matildas go all the way, Victoria's going to look very, very lonely. The last comment I'll make before Derek has a comment here is that I remember, obviously I work in the game, so I got to see Women's World Cup games in all states. And the one thing I noticed about the Women's World Cup games in Melbourne were that all the other states had free transport to go to the game. In Melbourne, you had to pay. And also the associated livery around the games in Melbourne was only about 10% of that it was in other states, which sort of made that the atmosphere in Melbourne wasn't as good. And I know that that also sort of hit home amongst the federal people involved in these sort of things at government level. So yeah, Victoria it's only got itself to blame. And I noticed the spin by the minister saying that, you know, they've already got a packed amount of events when this is scheduled to be played, but I don't believe that.
Well, I think that does play a little bit of a role, Edge, in that the Victorian government are petrified of losing either the tennis, the Grand Slam, the Oz Open, or the F1 Grand Prix, two massive global events that are annual and would be snapped up by anyone else. I mean, Sydney, Adelaide both want the Grand Prix. I think China want the Asia-Pacific Grand Slam. So they're that scared of losing those two events, which they've cranked so much coin into, that that does restrict them in bidding for events that pop up like this on the fly. Not to disrespect this, but this is a once-off or a twice-off with the Women's World Cup. Would that be a factor?
No, not at all. I mean, those events, I don't think it plays into it at all. I think if the Victorians had the money, they would have done it. They haven't got the money.
Okay, my argument would be that's where their money's going. But anyway, Derek, your take?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, I just raised the old chestnut of the quality or lack thereof of rectangular facilities in Melbourne and in Victoria. Now, this isn't maybe the reason they didn't put their bid forward or put any bid in, because as Edge says, they might be cash strapped. That being said, there's no incentive to host the tournament. You know, they haven't invested in rectangular infrastructure significant rectangular infrastructure in some time. You know, I know that people can get a little bit defensive about Amy Park because, yes, when it's full, and, you know, I've been there pretty full across codes, whether it be the Women's World Cup, whether it be some of the Lions rugby, City victory games. The place can rock, but it's only a limited capacity. I suspect that if they had a bigger stadium, the more people would want to come, there would then therefore be a larger economy for it, and there'd be more reasons to invest in it. But it's kind of, until they actually go out and say Melbourne needs a world-class square or rectangular facility, I don't see why the governments will invest in football. I might be wrong, but it sort of illustrates to me just how the game plays second fiddle in Victoria, that's for sure.
Are they still somewhat stymied, Edge, by that deal that was signed when Colonial, now Marvel, was built in 2000-odd, that would be the only rectangular/secondary stadium after the MCG to be of a certain capacity?
Well, we're sort of 30, 40 years on from that, and I remember at the time it was meant to have the retractable seats that were easy to bring in and out, that was going to give us a rectangular configuration to, be a significant player in some of the rectangular sports, and it did that for a little while. But now that the AFL own it, the grandstands haven't moved in many years. So, yeah, I think Derek's right. The limited capacity of Amy Park is now a thorn in the side of the Victorian government when it wants to do these things, when it can't have access to the MCG or the Docklands. So, it's a big thing that the Victorians need to fix in it. If we were ever to bid for a World Cup, which, you know, maybe not in our lifetime, Willem, but the one big event that is likely to be coming to Australia, if everything goes to plan, is the Club World Cup. And I can see that the FIFA Club World Cup, you know, these big brands coming here, and I can see them not playing in Victoria because of that rectangular stadium issue.
Ed, you've got 1 minute to get us up to speed with the English Women's Super League, which has a plethora of Aussies at the pointy end and 3 weeks to run.
Well, I'll just be very, very quick over this. I just wanted to obviously make note that the Women's Super League is packed full of Matildas. Caitlin Ford and Steph Catley both got assists in Arsenal's 3-0 victory over Rennie Sampson's Leicester City, who seems to be one of the forgotten girls of Australian women's football. She didn't get in the World Cup squad. Michelle Hayman's ahead of her now in the stakes for the number 9 spot. Even at Sam Kerr's injury, Remy seems to have fallen away by the wayside. I don't know, I'm going longer than a minute. Sampson, she was an unused sub for Leicester City. Kyrie Cooney-Cross was absent for the Gunners. We hope she's okay. Alana Kennedy and Mary Fowler both played full games for Manchester City, who put 5 past Mackenzie Arnold in their win over West Ham United. Tegan Micah was back in goal for Liverpool. Claire Wheeler, she was playing for Everton, a full shift. Charlotte Grant was an unused sub for Tottenham. Amy Sayer, she's not in the Women's Super League, so I'll leave that alone. But plenty of Matildas going around on a week-to-week basis in the Women's Super League, Willem. And we're coming to an end. And obviously Arsenal, Manchester City, are going to figure heavily in the run home to the finals.
No, very nicely done. Edge, thank you very much for your participation and input this week, as always.
You're welcome, Willem.
And to you, Derek. We'll see you midweek for stoppage time.
Looking forward to it.
Good luck to the Mariners and Yokohama in Asian competitions midweek. Thank you to Adam Maloney on the buttons. Nails it week in, week out. And thank you to you, the listener, for joining us. Reminder to get in touch on Facebook at Box to Box, on X at Box to Box NTS, or through the website at boxtobox.com. And join us again as our podcasts drop and we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.